Thank you for visiting Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio. You probably came to our podcast site to catch one of our interviews, or you might be here because you know something isn't right with that story they're telling you, that the economy is about to be rescued. Everything will start growing again. Corporations are here to help you. Global trade is good for us. Toxic sludge is good for fish. And oh yes, war is peace. On Shift Shapers, we interview today's thinkers and authors about economic meltdowns, shady military and surveillance programs, climate shock, and fuel shock, also known as peak oil. They give us a true reading of what is in front of us and some clues about how to survive and go forward in an uncertain future. While you're here, browse through our menu of interviews. You'll find Michael C. Rupert, author of Reinventing Collapse, Richard Heinberg, author of The End of Growth, James Howard Kunstler, author of The Long Emergency, Derek Jensen, author of Endgame, Jacques Fresco and Roxanne Meadows of The Venus Project, Guy McPherson, author of Walking Away from Empire, Alex Smith, Radio EcoShock, Mike Sozaby, filmmaker of Somewhere in New Mexico Before the End of Time, Carolyn Baker, author of Sacred Demise, Kathy McMahon, Peak Oil Shrink, Medea Benjamin, Code Pink, Pam Larry of Right to Know and Label GMOs. Also, numerous people involved in the transition, 350.org, alternative currencies, workers' cooperatives, and the Occupy movements. You will even find bilingual postings in Spanish and English. Welcome to Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio. Enjoy your podcast. Ted Mace knows something about coal-fired power plants. He has helped shut some of them down.
Many people have said this is one of the most successful environmental efforts over the last few decades.
For Ted, coal is dirty and it has to go.
Perspective of climate scientists, coal is kind of the silver bullet for stopping climate change.
Doing this is nothing small.
This is what happens when people organize at the grassroots and they're linked around the country.
Ted Mace also understands how corporations really work. He used to run one.
Probably the institution that's the most powerful in our contemporary world is the corporation, and we don't really get any education of it.
Today, he sees corporations out of hand.
How is it that corporations can do strip mining and all the other things they do to communities and to people with so much impunity in the United States?
It will take a lot of effort to turn that one around.
This is really phase three, the third wave of corporations rising up in America and then people organizing and pushing back.
Join me, your host, Daniel Kerbine, for an interview with Ted Mace, author of Gangs of America, The Rise of Corporate Power and the Disabling of Democracy, founder of the Coal Swarm activist site, and author of Climate Hope at the Front Lines of the Fight Against Coal. Big dirty coal, big dirty corporations running our country. There may be some things we can do about it. Wednesday on Shift Shapers, Pole Reversal Radio, 4 to 6 p.m. here on KBBF FM 89.1, Calistoga, Santa Rosa, the East Bay, and the North Bay. Lord, I'm so
tired. It's called Don't Dig Too Deep. It's by a group called the New White Trash. It's one of the members is a guy named Michael C. Rupert, an author who's been on this show before. We've had a good time corresponding and doing the interviews, etc. Why I put that on is because we are going to be talking on Shift Shapers about coal. Coal, coal, coal. You know, nobody wants coal in their Christmas stocking. And we seem to be getting a lot of coal in our air. We're getting a lot of coal up in the atmosphere. We're getting coal even in the oceans. There's just an amazing amount of it being dug and mined and burned, and there's an amazing amount of it staying put. Coal waste, coal microparticle soot being just left all over the place. I'm interviewing someone who's actually doing something about it, and that's what's really rare about this. You know, we've just had this Rio conference of, I mean, it's hard to even define what the purpose of it was. The United Nations had 20 years ago a meeting in Rio de Janeiro, and they established how important it is to deal with climate change, how important it is to put things in place that would cut back tremendously on things like coal-burning power plants, on things like vehicles that burn a lot of fuel, things like oil, things that burn fossil fuels and send that waste, that carbon dioxide waste, as greenhouse gas into the atmosphere, which is causing the atmosphere to kind of be like saran wrap around the earth. You know, like if you went out in the sun and you had saran wrap all around your head, you'd get very, very warm. And that's what carbon dioxide does to the earth. Well, you know, you'd think that people would want to do something about that, you know? But it takes work. It takes coordinated effort. It takes the really boring, hard stuff, you know? Stuff that might cost somebody money. Things that might keep somebody else from making all the money they want to, like oil companies and coal companies. So this second conference in Rio, 20 years after the 1992 conference, where 20 years ago was so important, so critical that we do something to save our habitat, somehow it's only important to people who remember how important it was 20 years ago. It's not that important to, for instance, the Obama administration didn't show up. It's not that important to the United States government. It's not that important to Canada. It's not that important to India. It's not important to China. There's something they all have in common. And there are a number of other countries, too. You know, Australia kind of did a sort of a showing. One of the things that they have in common is coal-burning electric power plants. You know, and it's so pervasive. There are so many of them that there's all this talk about electric cars. And you plug in the electric car, and then look at that, you're not using gas. You plug in the electric car, you go, you know, however many miles, 30, 40 miles, good commute vehicle, right? And you're not using gas, but guess what? Every time you charge up, you're burning coal. Yep. Now, in California, we don't have quite that thing with it. There really isn't. Now, there's a certain amount of, down in the Four Corners in Southern California, there's a problem there, but it's not in the state of California all that much. It's natural gas that's being used here. That's a whole other issue. We're not going to go there today. So during this first hour, we're going to be talking to somebody who's actually done something. I mean, like, he didn't just go to Rio 20 years ago and then forget about it. He actually is doing something about it. His name is Ted Nace, and he's got some credentials. He has started up a website that is called Coal Swarm. It's kind of like a wiki. When there's something coming up and it needs to be responded to, it could involve actually closing down or stopping a power plant, a coal-fired power plant, then the Coal Swarm site will just send everybody an alert. He's also been working very closely with the Sierra Club, in particular the Cumberland chapter, some of the other areas out there where in order to get the coal that has to be burned to make electricity and destroy the climate, it also is necessary, apparently, to the coal companies in Virginia, in West Virginia, in Kentucky, those areas. Evidently, it's important to detonate with dynamite, huge amounts of it, destroy entire tops of mountains, just blow the living tops right off of these mountains. And all habitat, all life, all forested area, all rivers, all creeks, all ponds, all leaves, all anything that's rooted in the earth, gone. Gone. Destroyed water supplies. Destroyed rivers. People downstream, depending on fish, depending on water supply, not there. Not there. So maybe it is good advice to not dig too deep. Maybe when it comes to coal, it's really good advice. Well, when Coal Swarm has actually been able to close down 160 coal-fired plants in the United States, they've also been able to prevent 100 coal plants from coming online. Now, what that also means is the demand for that coal that's causing the mountain destruction right here in the United States, right here in the United States, where we're supposed to be the educated people. You know, we're supposed to be the ones that have, you know, the smarts. everything's smart. We've got the smart bombs. We've got the smart cars. We got the smartphones. You know, we're the smart ones, remember? We're supposed to know better than to blow the tops off our mountains, aren't we? Isn't that kind of an American sort of thing, that we're supposed to know better than to destroy our own nests so that we poison ourselves? I mean, we're supposed to be smart enough. I don't know, maybe not. But at any rate, Ted Nace, I think, is one of those people that is smart enough to know that. He has written a book called Climate Hope: At the Front Lines of the Fight Against Coal. Hey, yeah, at the front lines. And also another book, which is fascinating, and actually is what caused me to call him to set up the interview. Because in our second hour, we're going to be talking about corporations. Because who is it really? Who really is it? It's not the U.S. Army going up on these mountains and blowing them up. It's not the United States government going in there and blasting away creeks and rivers and all life forms and destroying everything in the Appalachian Mountains. It's corporations doing it. Coal companies. Energy companies. You know what I mean? I think maybe you do. It's like there's a pervasive hugeness and power that somehow this is not a business anymore. It isn't business anymore. It's something else. It's take everything you've got and destroy it. Squeeze it for every dollar we can get out of it and leave you a burnt out husk of a mountain. Leave you a burnt out husk of an atmosphere. Leave you a burnt out husk of a planet. Because we got to get that bottom line going, folks. We can't let anything happen to our stock prices. Interesting thing, and we're going to hear this during the interview, that Ted Nace's group, Coal Swarm, has actually caused, they've been part of the cause. Sierra Club has been a big part of this too, has been part of the cause of the coal companies are actually losing money out of all this process, of their plants not opening and their plants being closed down. They're actually starting to look at alternative power generation methods. And their stock, though, the stock of the coal companies is going down. It's gone down something like, and he'll tell you, it's like about 40%. So we're going to get on with this interview. Okay, let's give it a second or two, and we're going to get that interview to you. Welcome to Shift Shapers, Pole Reversal Radio. I'm your host, Daniel Kerbine, and I am on Skype here with author and environmental activist Ted Nace. He is the author of Climate Hope: At the Front Lines of the Fight Against Coal. He is the originator of the Coal Swarm Wiki, which we're going to get into talking about what Coal Swarm is and how that works and how that's been a factor in fighting against the spread of coal mining and coal burning. And also, Ted Nace is the author of Gangs of America, which is really what got me to be contacting you, Ted. It's the title of the book is Gangs of America: The Rise of Corporate Power and the Disabling of Democracy. Certainly a compelling and provocative title with plenty of factual information to back it up. So, Ted Nace, thank you for joining us here on Shift Shapers.
Thanks for having me on your show.
What I'd like to start off with is, because it's fascinating to me that here we have all kinds of fossil fuel resources that we hear about that are running out. You know, we hear about peak oil. Even people who don't believe in peak oil very often have heard of peak oil, that we're at these junctures where fossil fuel is not only a bad idea for the burning of it and the environmental results, but that we're running out of them. And it comes down to, again, usually in that discussion, oh, but we've got plenty of coal. And when I see people actually putting effort into stopping the proliferation of coal-burning plants and coal mining, it seems like a pretty big project. But you've had some successes, haven't you?
There's actually a very widespread movement that has focused on stopping new coal-fired power plants from being built and then retiring the existing coal-fired power plants. So coal produces about half of the electricity in the United States, but it actually produces inordinate amounts of carbon dioxide. So the head of NASA's climate program, climate research, Dr. James Hansen, he said that ending coal is 80% of the solution to global warming. So from the perspective of climate scientists, coal is kind of the silver bullet for stopping climate change. If you can end coal, then other sources of fossil fuels may either be more limited or may be more amenable to being phased out. So there's been a strategy for the last few years. There have been really two strategies in the environmental movement. One was sort of a federal government aimed effort to get big national and even international legislation, things like cap and trade programs, and carbon taxes, and all that has generally flamed out. It has not been successful. Mm-hmm. But there was another thrust of the environmental movement, which was much more under the radar, and that was at more the grassroots level, aiming at particular coal-fired power plants on the ground, so all around the country, kind of like the anti-nuclear movement.
Right.
But a wider movement spread in more areas of the country, and actually more successful. So at this point, over 160 proposed coal-fired power plants have been stopped, and over 100 existing plants are now scheduled to be phased out. And the amount of coal used is down now from the normal 50%. It's now under 40%. And the coal industry is definitely on the ropes. Stocks in coal companies are now plummeting.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very real chance that coal will be mostly phased out in the next 20 years, which was the target set by the climate scientists. So overall, many people have said this is one of the most successful environmental efforts over the last few decades.
Wow, and we don't really hear a whole lot about it. It's something where, now I don't really subscribe all that much to what is usually referred to as mainstream media, and I have a whole lot of subscriptions, et cetera, and I don't even watch the news on television. But my understanding from people who do is that you really don't hear that much about that this is happening. Well, you're talking about a cumulative result where you've got a large number of coal plants that have been, even though they were scheduled to get started, that they were abandoned, and that there were operating plants that actually were stopped. And can you give those numbers one more time?
Yeah, over 160 proposed coal-fired power plants have been canceled. Now, the reasons this happened are multiple. There's been natural gas has gotten a lot cheaper because of fracking. That's not a good thing, but that's a phenomenon that's happening. There's been a very large expansion of renewables, especially wind. There's been the economic downturn, which pushed people towards more conservation just to save money and because of less business activity. But a lot of these things would not have actually resulted in coal being phased out if there wasn't a movement to sort of kick it off the cliff, because the coal industry has always been good at getting its plants built, even if they have to subsidize them. So just because the economics were falling apart didn't mean it wasn't going to happen. And in fact, like one of the victories this week was a coal plant that was already a quarter built in Mississippi was stopped. And this never happens. You know, you have something that's so far underway, but then it gets stopped. But this is what happens when people organize at the grassroots and they're linked around the country. So what I've been involved with and many other people is finding new ways to hook all of the local grassroots activists together more effectively without a sort of top-down structure, but sort of an anarchic sort of activism where lots and lots of groups are using different kinds of tactics, but it all adds up. That's why we call our group Coal Swarm. But it's true, most people don't really think about coal because coal is not mined in any place where most people go. 40% of the coal in the United States comes from a very remote part of Wyoming. And then it's usually burned in really big power plants that are also located far away from cities. Mm. So, you know, it's virtually invisible. But in many parts of the country, coal is really on people's minds. I mean, there's parts of the country like Appalachia where it's literally devastated large parts of certain counties and pushed people out of their homes.
Yeah. And just so our listeners know, I'm involved with the Sierra here in Santa Rosa, Sonoma County, California. And when I contact and talk to people in the Cumberland group out in Kentucky, people in Virginia and West Virginia areas, they are struggling. I mean, this is a survival issue for them. This is all-out destruction that they are fighting to stave off. That's what you're referring to is, part of it is that, right?
Absolutely. And what's happened is this grassroots sort of formula has worked so well in the United States. But as most people will tell you, if you say, well, we've done a good job of bringing coal usage down in the United States, they'll say, yeah, but it's up in China, it's up in India. And that's true. And right now what's happening is the grassroots activism that's been in the United States, we're learning a lot of that activism has been going on for years in other countries. In India,
they're actually better at it than some other countries.
In other countries, they're better at it. There have been marches against a very large coal mine in Bangladesh where 100,000 people marched against
this giant strip.
There are people in India where entire villages turn out to fight people coming in to build coal plants in the agricultural areas. And many people have been killed in India fighting coal plants. So it's a very intense struggle around the world. And part of what's happening now is that Sierra Club and other groups are actively supporting grassroots efforts in other countries. And one of the positive things about it is those countries need electricity, and many parts of India don't even have a transmission grid. But the fact is that photovoltaics, which is the main alternative to coal in sunny places, photovoltaic prices are dropping every 18 months by 20%. So you have 20% drop, 20% drop. And already they've reached what they call grid parity, where new coal is more expensive than new photovoltaics. So we're reaching that crossover point. If we can just hold off this new coal-fired power plant infrastructure from being locked into place, there's a real chance that in a few years' time, nobody will want to finance it. Nobody will want to pay for it. And so this is the tipping point right now toward decentralized green energy in the third world, where instead of building the conventional grid and reproducing all the mistakes that happened in the north, the global south could play out a whole different scenario. So that's the hope, and that's what we're working on.
That definitely sounds like a hopeful thing. Now, one of the things that I heard in what you just said is that it does matter to stop the plant from its initial setup because there is an infrastructure that gets built to accommodate coal. Does that mean that it's different from what the grid infrastructure would have to be to accommodate wind, let's say, or photovoltaic?
That's right. Absolutely. I mean, people talk about a smart grid. You need a more flexible electrical system when you have more sources of electricity. But in many ways, when you have decentralized electricity, you also have a more stable system. So you can't have when a 1,000 megawatt coal plant goes down or when a nuclear plant, which they're also trying to build in India, when that goes down, you've got widespread blackouts. But when you have a decentralized system of power that's producing power from local sources like wind and solar, then as long as you design the system around that, you can have both a more stable system and a more environmentally friendly system.
You're listening to Shift Shapers, Pole Reversal Radio. I'm your host, Daniel Kerbine, and we're listening to an interview that was recorded over Skype with an author and activist named Ted Nace. Well, it's all about dirty power plants and dirty power politics. It's how can we bring our out-of-control corporations back into serving the needs of the people? We're going to get into more of that in the second hour because we're going to be talking about the book Gangs of America, which actually is talking about not the Norteños, but it's talking about corporations. It's talking about ExxonMobil. Ted Nace is the author of Climate Hope on the Front Lines of the Fight Against Coal and Gangs of America, The Rise of Corporate Power and the Disabling of Democracy. While working for the U.S. Forest Service, as he mentioned during high school, he learned about the plans of several corporations to develop coal strip mines and other energy projects near his hometown of Dickinson, North Carolina. So he got active. Later on, he moved to California. He had worked, by the way, with a group called Dakota Resource Council and the Environmental Defense Fund. He went to California and started a publishing venture called Peach Pit Press that became very successful and became internationally successful. After he sold that, he went back to writing and wrote the book Gangs of America and got headlong into Coal Swarm, which is the wiki that he developed, and a website for alerting large numbers of people to get active in focusing against certain coal power plants. The object of Coal Swarm and also Center for Media and Democracy and Source Watch, which are partners with Coal Swarm, is to eliminate coal-fired power plants worldwide. And as he mentioned, the Coal Swarm activities have closed down 160 power plants, at least been instrumental in that, and also prevented 100 power plants from going online, coal-fired power plants. And if you want to know really what's at stake here around coal, it isn't just a lot of people know about that coal is really bad for the climate, that it actually adds greenhouse gases to a huge amount of weight. And it's very polluting, the burning of it, but also the mining of it. Here's something from Sierra Magazine. It's titled, Move Not Those Bones, Coal Mining in Appalachia Destroys More Than Mountains. It talks about destruction of cemeteries, family cemeteries in the Appalachian Mountains. The Webb Cemetery is on the side of a hill surrounded by lush Appalachian hardwood forest in a hollow between Cook Mountain and Montcole Mountain, where the Upper Big Branch mine exploded in 2010, killing 29 miners in Boone County. Many of the people buried here lived in Lindytown, which is right down the road and was once home to about 100 people. But in 2009, Massey Energy started buying out the town's residents to make way for its nearby mountaintop removal mining operation. One family refused to sell. All the other houses and buildings, including a church, were bulldozed. When we drove past, Dustin White, who lives in the town, pointed out small clearings in the woods, the footprints of disappeared homes. The road was rutted and falling apart, and like Lindytown, already becoming overgrown, fading back into the trees. Cook and Montcole Mountains, the mountains themselves, are being emptied from the middle and flattened from the top. Even in the deep fold of the hollow, the destruction happening above is evident. Beyond a distinct tree line, the top of the mountain is being pulverized into tiny, small, flinty chips by explosives and heavy machinery. It is then being pushed into a neighboring valley, exposing the wide, black stripes of coal seams. So far, 2,000 miles of the region's valleys have been filled in. By the end of the decade, it is estimated that 1.4 million acres of land will be affected. Making the land uninhabitable is only one consequence of destroying it to pick it clean of coal. Burying drainages with rubble causes flooding, just as releasing particulates in the air and poisons into the water leads to a variety of illnesses. That's what coal-fired power plants are all about. We'll be back to that interview with Ted Nace. Welcome back to Shift Shapers, Pole Reversal Radio. I'm your host, Daniel Kerbein. We are listening to an interview over Skype with Ted Nace, who is an intensely environmental activist, having to do with coal and climate issues. And he's also an author. He wrote Climate Hope on the Front Lines of the Fight Against Coal. The first book that he wrote is titled Gangs of America, The Rise of Corporate Power, The Disabling of Democracy. Because after going into all this stuff about how can a corporation go in and destroy entire mountains and valleys and rivers and be allowed to do that, where does a corporation get that kind of power? How did we give it away? So that's what the Gangs of America book is all about, because those corporations are gangsters. Let's face it, they're wrecking our nest. So, and it's our nest, by the way. So that's what that's all about, and we'll be covering that in the second hour. We're going to get back to the interview with Ted Nace, and this, just keep in mind, this is an example of one way that you can really get to their pocketbooks. And that's really the only thing, because even though the Supreme Court has recently said that corporations are persons, they're actually not. They're machines like robots. They're a technology that was developed to actually take business away from people, take the personhood out of business, so it's very difficult to sue individuals who are part of a corporation. That's the whole point of corporations, to shield the people who are masterminding these horrible activities like blowing up mountains. So it actually, a corporation is anything but a person. It's a shield, a fortress to keep people from having justice brought to them. So, very interesting. It's going to be an interesting second hour. So back to the interview about coal with Ted Nace. Got some ideas here. And if you want to join Coal Swarm, there'll be some ideas on that. In addition to greenhouse gases, coal, of course, is notorious for producing sulfur, which results in acid rain, and also is polluting the oceans. I mean, it's changing the pH in the oceans as well. That's an additional problem that coal burning is causing, isn't it?
That's right. And the original legislation that tried to control sulfur came about because people were concerned about acid rain, because sulfur dioxide produces acid rain. But it wasn't as well understood that sulfur dioxide and nitrous oxide also are the precursors to particulates. And more people are understanding how these very, very small, they call them ultrafine particulates, what they do to human health, how they cause heart disease, how they cause respiratory problems. So finally, the epidemiology was worked out in the 1990s, and they came out with the numbers that in the United States, something on the order of 20 to 30,000 people a year were dying because of coal-fired power plants. And overseas, in China, the numbers were in the hundreds of thousands per year. So when you lock in, India has had several hundred new coal-fired power plants on the drawing board. If those power plants were locked in, you'd have hundreds of thousands of annual deaths in India. This would be millions of people dying premature deaths over the lifespan of those plants. So like, just as you said, this is a matter of locking in the wrong kind of infrastructure, because once you build a coal plant, it'll go for 40, 50, even 60 years. And even within the way the economics of solar are going, even within the first 5 to 10 years, that plant would actually not be economical to run. Not even considering the, you know, what they call their external costs, the health costs on society. Fortunately, as a sheer economic proposition, coal has really deteriorated in recent years. Construction costs have gone up, and at the same time, the cost of buying coal has gone up, because there's a linkage between coal and oil. The more oil gets scarce, most of the cost of coal is actually diesel fuel to ship it, either by ship or by train, you know, to some distant location from where it's mined. So as that cost goes up, then the cost of coal goes up. So as an economic proposition, coal has just gotten worse and worse and worse. The same thing with construction costs. They're also tied to the cost of dwindling fossil fuels. So what's happened is that the financial community has really turned against coal. I mean, one financial analyst called coal a dead man walking.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so the focus of much of the activism has been to sort of raise the negatives and make bankers and international financing agencies really think twice before they commit the billions of dollars it takes to build one of these huge facilities. And that strategy has been really quite successful.
When we go over to places like China, when we look at places like China and India, now I have the impression that your efforts were really confined to the United States, but you're mentioning India, and of course China has made some sort of a grand commitment to coal for the future of their own. Is Coal Swarm something that you're looking at having an encompassing sort of influence outside the borders of the U.S.? Am I hearing that, what you're saying?
Yes, we are. We just hired a researcher in India, for example, and we have a researcher in Australia. And those are sort of the new battlefields for coal. And there's a new model of groups working together where, you know, you won't see the Sierra Club going to India and forming chapters of the Sierra Club in India. You won't see Coal Swarm going to China. But what we do now is sort of in the age of the Internet is we just reach out to allies in those countries. They might not even be sort of strictly speaking environmental groups along the lines of American environmental groups. They may be sort of mass peasant groups or, you know, or labor groups or health groups. But basically, they are most interested in basic issues of health and rural development and community control, rather than having this sort of industrial model imposed on local communities. So the idea has been for Western activists to reach out, to use things like the internet and social media and research tools to share the lessons we've learned here, just share basic information. So like what I work on is a wiki, like Wikipedia, which is building a larger and larger pool of information resources that can be used all around the world. And for India, what we recently did is we created a huge map with about 1,000 pages of information, and you can click on any part of India and find out what's going on in that area in terms of what coal plants are being built, what companies are active, who's financing it, where they're getting their coal, what's happening with the water, et cetera, et cetera. And fortunately in India, English is the common language of activism. Because there's so many languages in India that English is as convenient as any other language, and people are happy to use English. China is a different story. There is no real opening for environmental groups in the United States to really do much to help groups in China, both because of language barriers and because of political repression. So China is working its own thing out, and that's a big problem because about half of the coal that's both mined and used in the world is in China.
Okay. All right. And I would imagine the same sorts of damage would occur in India or China as what we see in the United States. I mean, when we open up our eyes and take a look out there in the Appalachian Mountains, we look in like the Four Corners and some of these places and where it's being mined, you said, like in Wyoming?
We don't know much, but sort of like the little islands poking out of the ocean. We hear now and then terrific fights where communities are fighting back because a coal plant is being built right on top of them. And of course, as I said about India, there have been serious community-based struggles all over the country. Very active environmental movement in India.
Is there kind of a classism that happens, like in India? There's environmental racism in the United States, and when you look at it, you can really see it, that the waste incineration plant goes right next to the place where the poorest people live, etc. Does that sort of thing show up in places like India or in China even?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the places where they want to build coal plants, India has these billionaires who want to build these plants. They're also building mines in Indonesia. The whole system is corrupt, and they want to build these coal plants right along the coast. Now, the coastal areas of India are environmentally fragile. They're often mangroves. They often have large numbers of people living, depending on both fishing and agriculture, right along the coast. Those communities often will have tens of thousands of people who would be displaced by a single plant or a single mine. And also the thermal pollution from the cooling water coming out into their fisheries, the smoke, the sulfur dioxide wiping out their mango orchards. I mean, in India, they build coal plants without even a basic scrubber. So it's just raw. Raw pollution. It's something out of the 19th century.
It's like those old pictures.
And the population density in India just makes it all that much worse.
Wow, that is a giant project. And it actually is hopeful to hear about the kind of progress that you've had. And how can people support what Coal Swarm is doing? I'm assuming it's a nonprofit and that you're...
I think people could gain a lot by just to coalswarm.org. And one thing they can learn a lot about is just about coal here on the Pacific coast of California, Oregon, and Washington. For example, Los Angeles is a heavy user of electricity from coal that comes, as you said, from areas of the country, the desert southwest, where people are watching transmission lines go over their heads and breathing the smoke from Four Corners Power Plant, who don't even themselves have electricity.
All right, we're just finishing up an interview here with Shift Shapers, with Ted Nace, who's an author and an environmental activist. It's been a discussion about coal and some effective ways that he and an organization called Coal Swarm have been employing very active methods to close down coal-fired power plants and prevent them from opening. One of the really interesting things that he just mentioned here is that I was under the impression that coal is not an issue in California, that we don't have coal-fired power plants here. And one of the things he just pointed out to me is that, no, there isn't a coal-fired power plant in California, but Los Angeles uses electricity that comes from and is transmitted from the Four Corners power plant over in the desert states of Arizona, New Mexico, etc. This is a place where the people there are having to breathe the smoke from the power plant and having to deal with all the particulate matter and everything it's generating. And at the same time, they don't even have electricity. They're in so much poverty there, they don't even have electricity, but they've got this power plant right next door. Figure that one. Okay, we're going to conclude this interview. He's giving some information about how listeners can be of assistance and actually take action on some of this and be able to actually see some results as things keep getting worse in the environment. Maybe there are some areas where it can be a little bit less worse if people work together on it.
That's the situation in Southern California and the desert southwest. And along the northern coast, there's plenty for people to get involved in because there's a big push by the coal companies. Since they can't seem to burn enough coal in the United States, they're being hemmed in here. They're trying to export coal through terminals in Oregon and Washington. And in every community where they're proposing that, there's a fight going on. And there's also communities along the proposed railroad routes who are organizing themselves. So if people go to the Sierra Club or they go to the Coal Swarm website, they'll see ways to get involved if they're interested. And, of course, we welcome any kind of support that anybody wants to give or just if people want to learn about more.
Great. This is so grassroots. This is fantastic. So we're talking to Ted Nace. That's N-A-C-E. And what he's just been talking about is an organization that he founded called Coal Swarm, coalswarm.org. And it's something where people can get involved. We are starting to see, if we haven't yet, we're starting to see the damage that coal, burning it, mining it, all the damages that coal is doing to our lives. And this is one way that we can actually put ourselves into the effort to just stop it once and for all. It's also the SierraClub.org is also involved with the effort. I'm going to mention that since I personally am involved with them. Not to promote it too much, but just to say that on this subject, there's definitely a lot of activism. Ted Nace, thank you for joining us. I appreciate your time here with Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio, and definitely appreciate your efforts in defending the environment and also just informing us as individuals with political responsibility.
And Daniel, thank you for your good work and keep it up. Congratulations on your show and best wishes to your audience.
All right.